You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey folks, welcome into On to Waveland. It's the Cubs podcast here at The Athletic. I am Brett Taylor with an extra pep in my step. That is Patrick Mooney and Sadhav Sharma. And the Cubs have won a series. Hopefully our producer can insert like the, you know, champagne corks popping and the rowdy crowd celebrating. And I mean, it is akin to the Cubs finally winning the World Series in 2016. I can't think of a comparable moment in my sporting fandom career. I joke-ish, but the Cubs, of course, haven't won a series since the first series of the season, which I like to point out had a game punted. So technically, you could say they didn't even win that series yet. So mid-May for the first series win of the year for the Cubs. Hooray!
Almost a sweep too. Oh man! If it wasn't for that,
inches away.
If it wasn't for that deadened ball that Brett loves so much.
Oh my god! Can we have a convo about? Have we? We don't have to do it right this second, but like, I don't know if we have talked about it on the pod about how much the discourse about the ball this year is really pissing me off. I feel like I'm on an island.
I get where you're coming from, but also like, isolated power is down like
it is
really down.
Like it is, but guess what? If you compare April and May of 2016 and before,
is it similar?
We're looking pretty comparable, okay. Except for the fact that pitchers are better. It drives me crazy. And I'm not saying you, but it's just like people post these statistics with no context whatsoever. And the two big things again. It's early in the season, so let's get some apples to apples. Two, pitchers are getting better every year, so that's a factor. And then three, MLB is intentionally trying to bring the ball back to where it was before they started monkeying with it in 2017. Like, which was it? I was there when every pop-up went over the wall, and everyone was like, these balls are juiced, this is ridiculous, and MLB yeah. was not telling the truth about it, and everyone was so pissed, and it was like, this is a scandal. Okay. And then they're like, yeah, we did, my bad, we did. And then they're trying to fix it, and it seems to be working, and everyone's like, these stupid dead baseballs. Frank Schwindel got robbed. Oh, this is so cruel. By the way, love Frank. That was an amazing moment. I wish it had gone out. In some cases it would, but you're talking about, it was a 33 degree 102.5. That's on the very edge of being a barrel, just barely a barrel. That ball does not always go out, especially at night in May in San Diego.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like a guy who just got sent down to AAA Iowa because he wasn't hitting, hits a fly ball in like one of the most pitcher-friendly parks ever. And like, what is there going to be like some like 30 for 30 or marquee documentary about the time Frank Schwindel almost hit a grand slam in a totally meaningless game? Like, it's going to be one of the worst Cubs seasons of all time. Like, okay, well, maybe they'll lose like 101 games instead of 100. Like, what are we talking about here? Like, that's how close it was. Okay.
Okay. So anyway, that was they were close to a sweep, but for the completely deadened balls, that are also inconsistent and also sometimes too sticky and sometimes not sticky enough. And
apparently on Sunday Night Baseball, they use the juice baseball, all sorts of madness going around.
That one. I love that one.
Yeah,
that one's absolutely good. Love the theory that MLB wants to de-juice the balls, because that's the best version of the sport, but also wants to juice them for the most watched games. Yes, that tracks. We've really thought these conspiracies through.
I don't think they're thinking anything when they come up with this stuff. They're just whatever makes sense at the time, whatever makes sense for your team.
Before we get angry tweets and emails, I know some of you do have considered takes on this, and I am being a little over the top in my annoyance about this. So you can click that unsend button.
I think this is where the Anthony Rizzo "it's just baseball" quote works, because I was trying to think of like another sport. Like, there was Deflategate, and that was like one team, a very specific team in like one game that became a big thing. Like, this is Major League Baseball across thousands and thousands of games across multiple years, spanning, like, you know, what I had said in a previous podcast, we need Lester and Lackey to just weigh in on this all the time. I'm sure they would have had very considered takes on this as well. The dead ball, live ball, juice ball era. But like, this is like classic baseball. Like, of course they haven't figured out the baseball yet. Like, why would they? Like, what in their recent track record makes you think it's like, all right, they're going to hammer this out. Both sides will come together and really figure out a great solution. Like, there's no evidence in any of the things that they've touched over the last several years that would make you think like, oh yeah, they got this one under control. Don't worry about it, guys.
And I think still parts of the baseball construction process for the big league ball are by hand, right? It's not entirely automated, right? So like, I don't know. Seems like when you're involving humans in creating these things at some level, you're going to have variance. I mean, we see it with the umpires. When you involve humans in jobs that robots could otherwise do, you see issues. Like a drone in the outfield, perhaps staying above the playing surface so that he couldn't accidentally collide with a shortstop and take him out of action for a while. Let's get into some hashtag content here with that said. So in the series clinching win by the Cubs, early in the game, Nico Hoerner was going out for a possible relay throw on a ball to center field from Jason Hayward. And the second base umpire was also going out, presumably to be in a position to observe a catch. I don't know. And it may have been his first game ever, because he did not know that you're supposed to be aware of any players around you. Because for the first time I can remember ever seeing, the umpire collided with a player in the outfield. I mean, it's like it's the classic. You had one job, you know, observe the play. Yes, but you have one job. Don't run into the players. And Nico sprained his ankle. We don't yet know the severity of the injury. David Ross, after the game, at least in the quotes I saw, was kind of having it both ways. It was sort of, yeah, I think maybe just be a couple days, but also we don't know how bad it is until the swelling goes down. And it's like, okay, that's not as comforting as I would have liked. That was one injury to stack upon an avalanche of them for the Cubs this year and continuing into this week. Look to your left, look to your right. Odds are both of those people are injured Cubs players. So I don't know. If I put you two to the spot and I said, name every injured Cubs player right now, do you think you would get it in one swift take, or how many do you think you would miss?
Probably quite a few. I think I can get Madrigal, Nico, Hermosillo. Nico's technically not on the IL, I guess. But those are off the top. There's probably more that I'm... who else am I missing here?
There are like five more this week alone. I'm not even kidding. Sean Newcomb, Seiya Suzuki.
Oh, yeah, Seiya. Yeah, of course.
And then you had the two COVID cases. And yeah, that's just this week.
And here's the thing. Majority of those guys that you and I just mentioned are the ones that... win or lose, you need to figure out what those guys are this season. You want them playing as much as possible. And hey, maybe I don't know exactly what's going on with Madrigal. Maybe this is a good opportunity for him to reset. Maybe there's a rehab stint coming in his future. Maybe this will work out best for him. The Nico and the Seiya injuries are the two that you definitely, there's no positives really to draw from them. Seiya, totally a day-to-day thing right now, it seems, and they're trying to figure out when he can be back in the lineup. the Nico one is, now that we just don't have any information on it yet, and that's the one that you have to wonder, what if this is a more severe ankle sprain where, you know, he's missing a month plus, that it just goes right back to, you know, what we discussed in the offseason. You don't know what you're going to get from him. Like, he's got, he hasn't played a full season. He gets injured far too often. And it's just really difficult to know what you have to find out what he is. You're starting to find out what he is when healthy, and it's really positive. And now with this, it kind of throws a wrench into things and makes you wonder, you know, what he can be.
Which, by the way, that's not you saying this was Nico's fault for the injury. Sadiv is just saying, because there have been so many injuries over the years, and this one included, it's been very hard to know what you have in Nico Horner. When we were, it felt like, and we talked about it on this pod so many times, it felt like he was emerging as, oh, he is a legit starting shortstop defensively in the big leagues. That's great. Let's see what the bat can do. And, you know, under the hood, he's been having a fantastic year at the plate. So, yeah, it absolutely sucks to see him go out for any amount of time, and or, like you always worry, to have his performance compromised. Even if he can play with an ankle, it's like, shit, what about that lateral movement at shortstop now?
Yeah, I mean, we talked a lot, even going back to spring training, and we all wrote about kind of the awkward fits on the roster and how it's kind of misshapen. And now we're seeing how much worse it can get when you start pulling off you know, multiple infielders from your opening day lineup. We were wondering what would happen with Jason Hayward. Well, is he like their second best available outfielder right now? Like, period. I'm trying to think off the top of my head. Like, this is how, you know, we knew that the Cubs farm system, a lot of the talent is weighted towards the younger end, the lower levels of the system. But Brett, I think you mentioned the other day of just like the amount of position players on the 40-man roster. And, you know, I think at some point we're going to be seeing, you know, the Nelson Velasquez types. I mean, guys like that. I mean, Morel is on the 40-man too. Like, not saying that these guys have necessarily earned it or are ready, but if all these 40-man roster spots are so precious, we're going to see guys kind of forced up, and, you know, that will be at least something different. It'll be like an interesting wrinkle. It's not like the best way to compete this year, but I do think those auditions we expected after the trade deadline, I think some of them might pop up sooner than anyone would have anticipated.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
I love that you mentioned that, because you took the words right out of my mouth, that, you know, in a year when Cubs might not be competitive anyway, and when you know that the time period for bringing these guys up might be pretty limited because it's just sort of a strict injury replacement at a dire time of tons of injuries, I think often about, like, well, what's the cost? You know, what is the downside of Nelson Velasquez coming up for a couple weeks? I mean, what is it? I can't see what that downside is. Same thing with Christopher Morel. It's like, he's on the 40 man already. Whatever. Bring him up, let him get a taste, let him be around the big leaguers, and then he's back down again. That way you don't have to DFA anyone else. You don't have to figure out how to coordinate someone else on the roster for a short time and then maybe have used up another 40-man spot for heading into the offseason. That isn't necessarily a rhetorical point, because there may be an answer why it's like, no, here's why it's really not a great idea to do that with these guys right now. I just can't see what it is. And so there is a part of me, especially those two guys, those two that we just named. Now, Morel is still at AA Tennessee. He played a bit at AAA last year. They had a very crowded infield, so he went back to AA to start this year, and he's just crushing. So he'll be up at Iowa soon enough anyway. And with those two in particular, I just feel like, you know, if the outfield is going to be this depleted and if the infield is going to be this depleted, whatever. bring him up, give him a taste. You know what? I just don't get what the downside is. And not that I'm rooting for like Nico to have to go on the IL or for Andrelton Simmons not to be ready to come back by the time that Nico goes on the IL. But I'm just saying, if that's where we're at, you've got guys on the 40, man. You might as well use them.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the downside can always be like the factors that you can't measure, right? Like, how do they handle the failure that likely will come because they're not ready for the majors? And if it's just, if they're completely overmatched, how does that impact them mentally? I mean, these are things you just can't measure, and things that the Cubs should know best, right? They should know these players.
We don't have visibility.
Right. Stuff, yeah. And they should know those things best. Like, how does this guy handle failure? How would he handle and when, you know, when it's properly explained to them that, hey, this is just a, you know, we need roster spots filled and we need someone up there. We're not expecting you, you know, to go out there and you know, hit the crap out of the ball just yet. There's still developmental, you know, points that you need to hit anyways. Beyond this, you keep working on whatever you're working on and see what happens type thing. So maybe it'd be fine. And I don't really disagree with you. It's gotten to that point with the injuries that you have to consider that type of stuff. So yeah, it's unfortunate that they're not like the top prospects that are knocking on the door that Cubs fans could get excited about, though. I mean, Velasquez is interesting, but I mean, what's his ultimate ceiling as well? It's not some impact outfielder, right? That's theoretically Brennan Davis, who hasn't been in the lineup for a week with a tight back, and even before that was really struggling. So there's just, you know, at the upper levels, as far as position players go, there's not a lot for Cubs fans to be all pumped about. These injuries don't even like give them that like side, you know, happiness of, hey, maybe we get to see someone for 2 weeks, you know, like when wasn't it Schwarber was called up originally for an injury, right? So like something like that you don't even get that right now, which is unfortunate.
Just a quick slide in on that. I think what they did with Schwarber too, if I remember correctly, it was, hey, you're coming up because we need you right now, but you are definitely going back down, you know, when whatever happens. And I liked that at the time because it sort of addressed the issue you were talking about, Sadiq, where guys might put a little too much pressure on themselves to be like, I got to kick ass immediately so I can stay. This is my moment. This is my chance. I do like that idea of being like, no. You still have developmental check marks to hit. So you're coming up because we need you, get some good experience, whatever, but then you're going back down. At a human level, maybe that's harder to pull off than when I just say it in a podcast, but I feel like that is the wisest approach for that. And we'll see. It's going to depend on how injured some of these guys are. If Suzuki can come back, if Nico can come back, if Simmons is coming back, then some of this is mooted for now.
I think too, when Schwarber came up, the Cubs had a stretch of interleague games in American League City. So they kind of had need. But this is kind of ridiculous that in terms of our podcast cadence here of like basically end of April, we're like kind of looking ahead, already just talking about buying at the selling at the trade deadline. And it's only May 12th. And we're talking about the Nelson Velasquez kind of call ups auditions. Like, this has really been we talked about heading into the season, some of like the worst case scenarios or kind of the lower end of their internal projections. And Brett, I think you've referenced this on Bleacher Nation of just like, this has got to be like their whatever, like one percentile outcomes here. I mean, it's hard to imagine how much worse this could have gone, just kind of from the rotation to some of the guys who have not clicked on the position player side, to injuries, to COVID things that are, you know, largely out of your control, to some of the elements earlier in the year where I think the Cubs feel like they probably should have won a couple more games than they did and built up a little more cushion, and that not happening. And now, you know, to see a lineup without Suzuki, without Horner, Madrigal off the board, like Frazier still sidelined, like a lot of the things Cubs officials and Cubs fans were excited about and wanted to see is just off the table right now.
And a lot of those maybe it'll work guys mm-hmm. haven't, you know, and Frank yeah. Schwindel being a perfect example with his odyssey this week of things were just not working for him. The timing was clearly off. I think we talked about it last week. And so he was going to be sent down to Iowa to get some time to work on things without that pressure. And then obviously the injury issues and the COVID potential for additional spread made the Cubs change their mind. And we'll see if he even has a chance to, like, you know, convince the Cubs, like, okay, never mind, we'll change our mind. But yeah, I think it is hard to imagine, you know, it can always get worse. We joked, I think, last week on that, but it is a little hard to imagine if you put yourself back in March and thinking about how every facet has gone. Boy, this is pretty bad. This is down in that 10 percentile range of reasonable outcomes. And but I did want to say the Cubs are winners of two of their last three games. Now, that's a .667 winning percentage, my friends. And, you know, that puts them on pace for, what, like 120 wins? So just, 130 wins. So, like, let's just, you know, keep an eye on that.
I mean, if you're looking for tiny little signs of some of these, you know, will this work out? You know, a couple of weeks ago and when talking with people with the Cubs, like, who's putting in work? Who's looking better than the numbers say they are? I was told, and this is while he'd been sitting for a few games, that Ortega was working on a lot and looked really good. And he's
been getting results lately.
And he's been getting the results lately. But that just gets me back to, like, these are the types of things that we're grasping at as positives. Like, he puts a couple good games together, has a couple, you know, well-struck balls, and he's got an 89 weighted runs created plus. And it's like, well, there's a positive for you. So these aren't, like, the greatest things for Cubs fans to really enjoy. But I did think the last few games, I've been trying to pay attention to his at-bats, and they've looked good. He's looked good, and you know, that's something small. He's not really a piece for the future, so to say, but, you know, something's working behind the scenes, possibly. So you could take that. Beyond that, I just feel like it's tough to take these positives. It's tough to find what's working. You can look at, I mean, we've said this every podcast, but you got to go to Myrtle Beach, I guess.
So, sort of on the Zoom here, you had this kind of like Larry David hesitation move, just like your facial expressions and your shrug. Is, maybe that's a positive, I guess. I'm sure it'll sound totally convincing on the podcast, just seeing you on the video screen. Was it like,
I was just trying to put that in the background. I think that, I think people will. I think
good.
I did you that identify. Yeah, that was identifiable enough.
Yeah.
I mean, we should, like, there were things this series, of course, that were nice to see. Scott Efrost, once again, just, gosh, like, you think of firemen, and that is him, and then some. And that's been great to see. I think the fact that the Cubs won this series on the road against a very good Padres team, despite the decimation of all those injuries, I mean, that's encouraging in the abstract, or it's enjoyable at least in the abstract. I think it was interesting to see Keegan Thompson get the start in that finale. Not really a traditional start. Maybe he would still be in that, like, stretching out phase if he were actually going to take continued starts. And I know that he said he was trying to treat it like a relief appearance. And, you know, he got some whiffs. It was the issue that we talked about last year when he was starting. It seemed like he was maybe conserving a little too much and not able to miss bats. And when he would come into the game out of the bullpen, it was like he was a different pitcher. The stuff was crisper. The velocity was a click better. And obviously we saw that from him out of the bullpen so far this year. So I was not necessarily nervous to see him start, but just very interested. And I thought he looked okay. He left a lot of stuff belt high, got hit hard and a lot of stuff didn't. He only got the one strikeout. So it was not necessarily great, but it wasn't night and day like it was last year. I don't know if that was your guys' sense as well, but do we think he's going to get additional starts from here? Or was that just a, well, Stroman's on the IL. We don't know what's going to happen with Justin Steele. So we just need to do this.
Yeah, that's a good question. I think everything is kind of day to day with those decisions. And I don't think anything's written in stone. I mean, it makes sense to get him more starts at some point, right? You'd like to know what he is going forward for sure. I'm not sure if, I mean, there's not been much of an update that I've seen on Stroman, right? I'd say until we know what's going on there and when he's coming back, he may get another start, but I wouldn't lock it in or anything like that. And am I missing? This is the thing. Now I'm forgetting is there another injury in the rotation outside of?
Well, Alec Mills is still out.
Alec Mills,
but Wade Miley has come back.
So I mean, I would guess that Stroman would be back before Keegan makes his next start, and Keegan is just valuable enough so valuable out of the bullpen that that Ross would prefer to do that. And Steele looked good enough his last start that you say, okay, keep going with this and see where this can go. Can he build off that and really turn into something? Cause I think there is something there with Steele. Like there are flashes there that make you think that this guy can give you six innings, it suddenly becomes interesting. A guy with stuff from the left side. I think it's worth pushing Steele a little bit further in the rotation now that we've seen some flashes that, you know, things are starting to come together.
Especially this year.
Yes, of course.
Yeah, I think ultimately Keegan, Steele, and Azale, I think ultimately, the Cubs probably deep down view them as those nice multi-inning relievers, and they want to get creative on that side. But to your point, like the circumstances of this day-to-day existence, I think they need to keep kind of Keegan in the hopper there as a potential option. And I think I'm just looking up here too. Like he threw almost 130 innings in 2018, and since then there's been like that huge drop-off. I don't know exactly what he could kind of get to this year in terms of like bulk starts, but yeah, I think from our perspective we're definitely curious because at least it's something kind of different to talk about. Like it's definitely one of those classic like spring training job battle type things that can help us get through here content wise but I'm not sure if there's like a huge belief that, you know, he is, you know, this sort of next starting pitcher. They've had trouble enough developing that. And clearly Steele was kind of above him in the pecking order coming into this year.
Yeah. I wonder if we will see, assuming health elsewhere, Thompson back into that multi-inning role until we get into the second half. And then, you know, it'd be certainly possible where you could see a couple arms moved out in late July, early August, and then you'd have maybe a little more flexibility and incentive to be like, okay, let's give a guy like Keegan Thompson a couple more starts in advance of the offseason. Because, you know, the reality is the Cubs are going to have to remake the rotation again this offseason, like entirely again. And I'm sure they would love to know, like you said, Mooney, okay, are those three guys, do we really just have to view them as really, really good multi-inning relievers? There's nothing wrong with that. I mean, they each of them genuinely, this isn't just like trying to make, you know, lemonade. Each of them genuinely has a unique ability to be very good in a multi-inning role in a way that not a lot of relievers do. It's hard to have a bullpen of eight guys where three of them are that type, because I think it can leave you short sometimes. And so I think they would love to know if at least one of them could head into 2023 as a back end starter. And then they would know more what they need to target this offseason at the front of the rotation.
I think you can also, I agree with you that it's, if all three are going to always be used as multi-inning guys, then it's really hard to make that work, right? You have to have a tremendous, tremendous balance. Why does that sound weird? Why do I sound like I'm not talking normally? Okay, You have to really find a good balance with that. And but I also think like you can use them as one inning guys, right? You don't have to use them all the time as multi inning guys. And all three of them have shown that. Especially Steele, right? Steele had a lot of one inning bursts last year. I mean, he could be a really good one inning guy on occasion. And also, you know, when you need that length, get that out of him on occasion. I think it could work if they're all bullpen arms, but yeah, obviously you have to find out what they are. It almost feels like maybe this is unfair, but it almost feels like there's no other choice now with Alzolay. He's lost so much development time that you just have to go that route with him. But, you know, I guess there's been success stories in the past, the rare success story where it works out with so many setbacks. But and we've seen him come out of the pen and just be like a three inning, just dominant arm. So, I mean, even better than Keegan. So I think that he could be really valuable if he can stay healthy for a full season and give you like a, I don't know, 100 innings out of the bullpen, if that's reasonable, maybe even a little less.
Yeah, I mean, this is what, like the fifth year we've talked about Alzolay of maybe stepping forward, and with Steele, this would be essentially his second kind of auditioning phase. And to Brett's point, I mean, the Cubs are going to have to totally remake their pitching staff next year. There's kind of no way around it. And I think, you know, this will be more of a second half type thing, but we all know Caleb Killian is like the guy that they think can be a mid rotation big league starter for a long time. And, you know, he's kind of checking all those boxes. He is right. Not on the 40 man, right?
Correct. So he's rule five eligible after the season. Okay. So,
I mean, I think he's pitching well enough and the need is acute enough that it'll kind of, make that decision for the Cubs, but you know, maybe you pencil in him. I guess we see if they hold on to Stroman and Hendricks at the trade deadline or not. And then, you know, from there, you're still looking at, you know, 60 starts, you know, close to 400 innings. Where is it going to come from?
Well, 20 of those starts are going to come from Jacob DeGrom, so you can lock those in next year.
Well, Syndergaard, you know, I mean,
Well, the Cubs are just going to get the band back together. The old the guys they didn't acquire with. Remember when they had too many shortstops?
Yeah, that's
right. And they were going to get one of those Mets pitchers.
Matt Harvey's still available, right?
He's still out there.
Yeah,
Matt Harvey. They could do it. All right. Well, that's where we'll leave it. Today. And I'm not entirely kidding about DeGrom, by the way. I mean, he's got an opt out. I'm just laying those tracks. So the Cubs will stay out west. They got the Diamondbacks, the surprisingly competitive Arizona Diamondbacks, who I believe always play really well at home too. So that could be a tough series for the Cubs. And we will be back at you on Monday after that series. Hope you all have a wonderful weekend. I'm Brett Taylor. Get my stuff at Bleacher Nation. That is Sahadev Sharma and Patrick Mooney. Get theirs at The Athletic. Take care, all. See you soon.